And you're listening to The Naked Scientist with me, Chris Smith.
And with me, Kat Arney. This month, we're launching a series of programmes that will probe what it's going to take to send people to the red planet. Previously, we've looked at what it takes to be an astronaut, but this week we're focusing on the journey. How will we get to Mars?
To rocket engineers, just the idea of transporting humans to Mars is a really serious headache. Compared to rovers and other inert satellites and probes, humans are highly unpredictable, needy and fragile things. Radiation is our body's kryptonite. Microgravity renders our bones thin and weak, and if you broke a leg, for example, it could take months to fix. Now, these are just a few of the hundreds of problems that scientists are grappling with when they're considering how they might send people to the rocky red planet.
Greer Jackson ventured to the Mars Yard at Airbus Defence to meet Paul Meacham to uncover exactly what we're up against.
Mars is not the easiest place to get to. I mean, it's actually very demanding. Even just getting off the surface of the Earth is difficult because our gravity, it doesn't feel very strong to us, but it is an incredible force to overcome.
And then getting there, I imagine, it's what, 9 months?
It is a very long time, yes. 9 months in cruise. And of course, during that whole time, you're away from the Earth's protective layer. So you're subject to the full elements of space. It's quite tricky to overcome that.
You've got a big job on your hands then.
We certainly do. And that's why facilities like the Mars Yard are so important, because it allows us to practice everything we're going to need to worry about when we get to Mars on Earth.
Weirdest place I've ever been. I don't know quite how to describe it.
Lost for words I was, but imagine a giant sandpit filled with, well, bright orange sand and a mixture of real rocks and polystyrene boulders. Taped to the walls were vistas of Mars. Bar the lack of weightlessness, the scorching effects of radiation, and the bountiful levels of oxygen, I did feel like I was traipsing around Mars. This is the Mars Yard, and no, it isn't a film set. It's where scientists, like Paul, test out prototypes of the ExoMars rover, which will be sent to the Red Planet in 2018 for more scientific tests. The latest prototype is rather fondly referred to as Bruno.
Bruno has on him all the sensors the real rover will need to drive itself autonomously. That's the cameras and all the sensors in the wheels and that sort of thing. So essentially we practice driving the rover by itself in this Mars Yard.
Can we take her out for a... Oh, him. Can we take him out for a spin?
Yes, we certainly can. Yes.
Am I allowed to tread on the sand?
You can.
And away Bruno goes. Bruno looks like a giraffe. Instead of four legs, he has six wheels, and the wheels resemble the sort of things you get on tanks. What strikes me is there is a huge number of things to consider here and a huge number of things that could potentially go wrong. And this is just a rover that's, well, about my height roughly. What about when we're sending humans to Mars?
You've got to think about all the elements that the human is going to have to withstand and try and protect them as much as you can from it. So one of the easiest examples is the launch phase. So if you're strapped on top of a rocket, you know, it's not a very pleasant place to be. You are getting blasted with lots of vibrations, lots of sound waves. So you've got to build your spacecraft to be able to withstand all those forces and not transmit too many of them to the actual passengers.
How do you test that?
Essentially, you've got environmental test facilities where you have a big table that shakes the spacecraft. We even have a room where we do acoustic test. So essentially we stick the spacecraft in there and we blast it with sound waves. It's not a particularly pleasant place to be, because if you were a person in that room when we were testing one of our spacecraft, you would be killed.
Death by sound waves doesn't sound like a nice way to go. And that's just the takeoff. So what's next? What else have you got to think about when you get out of the Earth's atmosphere and into space?
Probably the main consideration is the radiation environment. As you say, we're leaving the protection of the Earth's atmosphere, and you are then subject to the full force of solar wind and cosmic radiation. We're well aware of the effect of radiation on the human body. It does not do nice things, and you've got to fly through that for 9 months.
I'm assuming that's a huge concern, because I know when on the Apollo missions that something like 3 days in space was the equivalent of 12 chest x-rays.
That's right. They flew through what we call the Van Allen belts, which are belts of radiation that surround the Earth. It's a particularly high-energy environment. But yes, I mean, as you say, that was only 3 days, and we're talking 9 months. So the equivalent dose is much, much higher, and so we're going to have to think about ways to protect the astronauts from that.
So we're in space. We're now protected somehow against the radiation. Mm-hmm. What else are we battling against?
The next thing to think about is actually keeping your astronauts alive, because you've got to take everything with them that they are going to need. Most essentially is oxygen, but oxygen is not a particularly pleasant gas. It's extremely flammable. So you've got to think about how you're going to store that very carefully. I mean, the famous Apollo 13 mission was caused by an exploding oxygen tank, and it caused serious problems. And at least in that case, they had half a chance of getting back to Earth, whereas if you're halfway to Mars and that happens, you have no chance of return at all.
If we do eventually overcome all these perils, what have we got to worry about when we're coming into the surface of landing?
Primarily, it's going to be the temperature range we're going to experience. So we have to qualify most things on the outside of our rover for temperatures between minus 130 degrees centigrade up to about 55. So you're going to have to create an environment which is around room temperature and can withstand these massive temperature extremes we see on the planet. And that's not easy to do.
No, quite. Do you have faith in your colleagues to engineer something clever that can do all these incredible things?
Yes, because I think we'd use something which is not dissimilar from what we use on the inside of the rover. The rover's main structure is called a bathtub, and it has the space equivalent of double glazing in order to create a thermal barrier through which heat can't get in and heat can't get out. And then when you do that, you can create quite a habitable microenvironment within that cocoon.
So our astronauts are going to be living in bathtubs.
Well, I shouldn't have called it a bathtub, should I? That's what we refer to the main structure of the rover.
Fantastic. Paul Meacham from Airbus Defence.